This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. Today's podcast is being recorded in the offices of Raider Solutions, a technology company located in the Light Center in Lafayette. Raider creates and maintains technical strategies for businesses of all sizes, functioning as their complete IT department. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work, we understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. Underwriting has also been provided by Lafayette Convention and Visitors Commission. For current information on all the events, festivals, things to do, restaurants, and hotels, please visit LafayetteTravel.com. Today's guest is Ken Veron, owner and proprietor of Cafe Vermilionville, perennially one of Lafayette's best and most popular restaurants for fine dining. Cafe Vermilionville has been featured in Southern Living, Sevier, and on the Cooking Channel, among others, and it's renowned for its Cajun Creole cuisine with an upscale flair. Built circa 1812, the building where Cafe Vermilionville is was called the Old Vermilionville Inn. It became a working plantation and then headquarters for Yankee General C.C. Washburn in 1863. And then in the 1950s, it became a residence known as Rickwood. In 1969, the historic building was converted to Maison Acadienne, a dining establishment, and then Judge Roy Bean's Saloon in the early 1970s by Charlie Goodson and Earl Hebert. In 1981, the property was refurbished and opened as Cafe Vermilionville. It's on the National Register of Historic Places and owned by Ken's parents, Ken and Mary Veron. Ken also serves as chair of Eat Lafayette, an annual summertime campaign which supports locally owned restaurants, and it reminds all of us to continue to enjoy the restaurants that have made Lafayette the culinary destination that it is today. Ken, I'm really honored to welcome you to Discover Lafayette so we can get into more detail about you growing up here in Lafayette and in the restaurant business and what your hopes and dreams are for the future of Lafayette's culinary scene. So welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Jan. Thanks for having me. Yeah. This is a great opportunity. I've been looking forward to this.
It's always a pleasure to see you. I met you and your wife, Andrea Veron, several years ago when y'all were first moving into the downtown area. And before we started the show today, I learned a lot about you, that you are a musician, and that you have a lot of other things, irons in the fire, that I wasn't aware of. So if we can talk about growing up in Lafayette, where you went to school, and what it was like to have your dad be the proprietor of Cafe Vermilionville.
Yeah, wow.
It's a lot.
Yes. Well, born and raised in Lafayette. Catholic school raised, but I did go to a public middle school, which is great. Paul Breaux Middle was an exceptional educational experience. Catholic High School, St. Thomas More. I went to graduate of UL, 2000. Moved to Houston for a short stint right after middle of college. Came back and finished school. Worked in a few restaurants.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I worked in many others, actually. Uh-huh. Cafe V was actually one of my last waiting gigs.
Getting ready for that, the big league.
Well, it was more of a brigade system at that point. And, you know, it might have been my time. I was young, and it might have been my time. I'd put in my years to become a waiter, but it seemed a little, well, to use a better term, nepotistic. And so I figured, let me go check out some other restaurants. And, I mean, it was great. I got to go out and work with some great people and learn a lot from outside of the restaurant.
Right.
Actually, Andrea and I met, my wife met at Blue Dog.
I wondered where you met.
Yeah, we worked there briefly together, and I was kind of more on my way out, but I ended up staying there one day a week. And I made sure I worked on Monday nights. I knew that's when she was working.
Oh,
and I was look, I gotta hang on, because, man, I really like this
I
gal.
Remember when y'all were engaged. She just, what a love story. She was so excited,
man,
and I didn't realize that's where you met.
Yeah, and I mean, and eventually I moved on and waited tables at Cafe V at the end of my college career. Managed there a little bit after college, and then I got in the real estate business for 10 years, which was wonderful. It afforded me some opportunity to do a lot of other things,
right?
You know, play music. You know, my old band never really went really big, but you know, Weekend Warriors. You know, 2-3 gigs a weekend, something like that.
You play guitar.
I play guitar. Yes.
And what was your band?
Well, I was playing with the singer-songwriter Mike Dean. So we're with the Mike Dean Band, and they're still at it, you know, mm-hmm. playing Texas every weekend and everything. And those guys are great, just great brothers and friends. And unfortunately, when we did buy the restaurant, I did have to bow out of that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, weekends just weren't really conducive to being
That's the
bar.
Restaurant time. Yeah.
So, but, you know, that's kind of where I've been.
Right, right.
Came back to the restaurant business in 2011 and worked as basically general manager for 3 years. And mm-hmm. then we bought the business at the beginning of January 14.
So you work with your father. And is your mother involved in the business or just an owner of the building?
She's an owner of the building. She uh-huh. was involved in the business up until about 2011. Mm-hmm. So
you work with your dad for about 3 years?
Well, we worked together right after college. That uh-huh. was kind of the main time where I really, really worked more hand in hand mm-hmm. with him. When we came back in 2011, it was more like, okay, let's see if we can create a model of a business that works for Andrea and I.
Right.
You know, and if so, you know, we would purchase the business after the fact. So yeah. it was a great opportunity in that regard. And of course, we knew exactly what we were getting into.
Yeah.
Well, I say that. Maybe not.
Do you ever really know? I mean, I cannot imagine running a restaurant. Every weekend, nights, every special occasion, you're at the restaurant. I mean, I think the most recent occasion, Ken, was Mardi Gras. My daughter was one of the Greater Southwest maids, and it was one of the most fabulous brunches, the day of Mardi Gras, and there you and Andrea were, you know, and it was absolutely perfect. But I'm sure some days you might want to be out enjoying holidays also, and restaurant business takes over your life.
It does, but we're so grateful to be working on Mardi Gras Day with that. You know, I mean, we get called on to do that breakfast and brunch. I mean, that's amazing.
It's awesome. Yeah, jazz band, beautiful presentation and food. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is fun. It really gets us in the spirit, you know,
yeah.
to do that. So.
So once your dad was out of the picture, I guess, when you guys bought the business, can you tell me about that, what it was like when you realized this is my business? I mean, you knew the business somewhat, but it's got to be different once the paperwork is signed and you take over at the helm.
I'm a firm believer that I think that the most presidents of the United States should at least have to make one payroll.
Yeah.
You know, you're a citizen, you're 35 years yeah. old, you have to at least know what that's like to go through at least one point. And then nothing prepares you for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people talk about ownership in the restaurant business, and I look at it very loosely. I'm not sure who owns what at what point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do know that it's a credible amount of just letting go and going with the flow is a huge part of making that thing work.
Yeah, and just answer your banker's call whenever he checks in.
Well, most people, you know, small business like us, we are the bankers, so we're keeping okay. everything, you know, for the business.
Keeping it afloat, yeah.
Just keeping, because it takes such a scrupulous eye
right.
know, almost every day.
It's, right.
It's incredible effort by you and your team, everybody working towards a common goal, mm-hmm. and you just never know what's going to happen. Expect that you don't
right.
know, and it will happen.
Well, I know when you took over, I looked at some pictures kind of documenting, and you and Andrea have done another refurbishment. I mean, you changed some colors and you, I guess, updated in the last couple of years. When was that? I mean, I know there was some major work done.
We did a pretty major remodel in 2015
mm-hmm.
and, you know, kind of getting more back to more of a purist version of the house, you know, different colors and things like
yeah.
that. We incorporated some more traditional that were more true to mm-hmm. to the house itself.
Right.
We had a great time doing that. We were on site property managers. We built our camper. We set our camper up in the parking lot. We closed for a week, obviously.
Yeah.
And
just
we were on site. I don't think I left property for like 8 or 9 days.
That's amazing.
Like that.
Yeah. You know, that reminds me when I interviewed Charlie Goodson, we had mentioned this before the interview. Charlie said that when he and Earl Hebert back in the early 70s took over that building, they lived in it while they did the work.
Wow,
so it's similar to what you and Andrea were doing, just on site. But he said they were able to do everything with like $4,000. I mean, today, I know it's a different story, but it's so hands-on. And you've also incorporated, if you would tell us, like, what's it like now at Cafe Vermilionville for people that might be listening that don't live here in Lafayette? I know you have nights where there's music, and can you kind of describe what it is you and Andrea would like to have people look at your restaurant? What kind of vibe do you want to have there?
Well, first and foremost, you know, we want everybody to be comfortable. You know, I think that there's a conception of Cafe V as being a place of celebration, an uppity place where you go in a coat and tie and things like that. And I think dining culture is changing just mm-hmm. as a whole with that. Mm-hmm. And we just want people to come as they are. And our food will taste better if that's the case. You know, I mean, we're an experience. You're going to be with us for a while.
Right.
And we want it to be a full sensory experience. You know, we do live music. Mm-hmm. We do rehearsal dinners. We do weddings. We do a lot of different things just hosting those moments. And that's really cool to be in the memory business, you know.
But you can go casual. I mean, I've seen people. I know, like, big occasions, like Christmas Eve, people dress up. But your daily lunch crowd, people show up in all manner of dress. And it's just always worth it, you know.
However you like it. So I guess if there was to be, you know, some sort of preconceived notion that we would like to dispel, mm-hmm. it's formality, you know. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, and it can still be formal but not stuffy. It's just a new day, I think, with dining culture, and people are looking for things not necessarily casual by any means, but just comfortable.
You're saying. Yeah. And I know, I was looking back, it's the Cajun Creole cuisine that you've maintained. And I know one of my favorite things when I go there is the turtle soup. I was looking at your Mother's Day menu. We're taping this in early May 2018, and the Mother's Day menu looks outstanding. I mean, would you talk about that, how you and Andrea work on the menu, and do you get involved in that, or do you have a chef that you depend on?
Oh yeah, we're hands-on in every aspect mm-hmm. of the business. You know, creating dishes, working with the chef to see our vision through. Sometimes, you know, we'll put the chef on to something. Hey, this is what we'd like to change in the menu. Mm-hmm. We want to bring something new and fresh, and they'll work on that project. We'll feature it a few times and listen to the customer feedback. I mean,
right.
If the restaurant business was all about what we liked, it would be easy. Mm-hmm. But it's not that way. So we do have to get, you know, feature things and see what people like, and we listen.
Right.
But, you know, we also want to keep true with traditional Cafe V. You know, mm-hmm. the turtle soup
expect.
Will always
yeah.
be there.
It's just
the crawfish beignets. I mean, yes. So mm-hmm. the left side of our menu is all of our classics. The right side of our menu, is basically a chef's canvas of what we do. Mm-hmm. And we don't change it seasonally. We change it when inspiration strikes. And, you know, if a chef has a new idea for a new protein that we want to work with in the center of the plate, hey, let's give it a shot. Let's mm-hmm. let's go ahead and feature it and see what people think.
And you learn pretty quickly, I'm sure, what is a hit and what maybe needs to be tinkered with, huh?
Well, it's always tinkering, uh-huh. you know, as you go along. Maybe one dish just kind of lost a little bit of one thing that maybe it once had, you mm-hmm. know. And it becomes time to change it. Or maybe you've come across a new product that you're like, oh my, wow, these lamb chops are incredible.
Right.
We need to be featuring these, and let's come up with a winter set for mm-hmm. them, because, you know, it needs to be hearty. Or a spring set when we're looking, you know, more mint flavors with the lamb.
Right. Oh, that sounds so good.
Yeah, I love lamb, really. But, you know, we tend to play with a lot of the same mm-hmm. same center of the plates. I mean, like scallops, for instance. We had a scallop dish that was on our menu for 3-4 years, and it wasn't because we didn't want to change it. It was because it was that good.
Yeah.
And we couldn't come up with anything better to replace it.
And people are disappointed probably when they've had something and they're going back and they're like, oh, no, it's not on the menu. Do you have people tell you what they want if something's not on the menu? Can your chefs accommodate that? Or is it more of, you know, if I go in there and just say I want the scallops?
Absolutely. We can uh-huh. accommodate anything. And, you know, dietary restrictions these days really, really kind of bring some challenges into the kitchen kind of on the fly. Mm-hmm. So
they're ready.
Yeah. And it's wonderful. You know, we have to get really creative, especially mm-hmm. when you get into vegan dishes and things like that. But it's what the people want. And that's what this business is about.
Right.
It's not about what we want to serve.
I know that the restaurant opened in September of 1981, and you are so traditional. I think people think of Cafe Vermilionville when they think Lafayette. I mean, there's very few restaurants that have been consistently good for this long, and I'm kind of curious, Ken, the trends maybe haven't changed much, but are people's behavior changing? Like, are you seeing a difference with a waiter and Uber with people? Like, is technology changing your business?
Absolutely. All the time, and we constantly have to evolve with that technology also. For instance, Uber's been an amazing thing for our entire city.
Yeah, people can relax now. If they're drinking, they can just go and relax and not worry about how they're getting home.
Well, we host a lot of the Mardi Gras balls, mm-hmm. and you know, it's amazing. We'll be fully booked for the evening, and we'll have walk-in tables on that Saturday night walk-in. It's like, can I get a table? I'm like, no, we're fully booked. Well, what do you mean? There's no cars in the parking lot. Well, let me show you. And everyone,
I didn't think about that.
But everyone was so responsible in Ubering to the ball. And
I love that.
It was amazing. It was a great thing to see with Lafayette. It really was. It seemed like there was some good progression there. It's like, hey, guys, we're going to be honest. Let's take a ride tonight.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That alone, I mean,
I hadn't even thought about that, because appearances would be, let's go sit there, you know.
I mean, technology, I mean, everything is in the cloud now. Everything is internet-based. I mean, phone systems, OpenTable has, you know, revolutionized a lot of what we do.
You utilize that?
Yes.
So people can just go through OpenTable and make a reservation?
Yes. Uh-huh. I mean, our point of sale, I mean, all of it, it's all mm-hmm. you know, technology-based. And mm-hmm.
You still take cash?
I heard that's an endangered species.
That's actually what I heard, but I wondered, I mean, if somebody's got cash, you know,
absolutely.
I'm sure you'll take it.
Yeah, it's become such a minuscule part of probably most businesses.
Right.
But,
right. What about waiter? Do you utilize waiter? Do you send out meals, or is this more really a sit-down dining experience?
We are not currently using waiter, and it's because of that.
It seems like it would almost ruin the whole experience. Like the turtle soup, there it goes down the road.
Yeah, and we've always just kind of said, look, it's more of a sensory experience.
It's
the building, it's the ambiance, it's everything about what we do. And I just don't know where we use it personally all the time.
I just don't know
if Cafe V would translate.
Yeah.
In waiter.
I've heard that from Joey's. You know, Joey Bate with Joey's. He uses it all the time. He loves it. I'm like, you don't cook when you go home? He says, no, I don't want to cook. I'm cooking all day.
You know? Oh, the cobbler's children
loves
have
waiter.
No shoes.
Yeah, that's right. Well, tell me, what are some of the current trends you're seeing now? Like, what are people, before we move on to something else, what are some of your most popular dishes and longtime things for people that think, I want to go to Cafe Vermilionville? Like, what are some of your longtime stalwart dishes that people really should check out?
Well, the steak Louis is probably one of our signature dishes for at least over 25 years now, if not closer to 30. You know, it's our signature stuffed filet with crawfish, you know, bell pepper, mirepoix, the Trinity, and so a little bit of bacon, things like that, some cheeses. Mm-hmm. That's actually stuffed in the steak, and then it's topped off with a three-day shiitake mushroom demi, and also a crawfish tail and mornay sauce. Which is just decadent.
It sounds decadent. Yes. Yeah, it's worth every bite.
Oh, it is. It's so wonderful.
Uh-huh.
But then on the, and you know, that's more of a classic dish. But on the new side, we're really proud of our dish. Our coconut snapper, which is we're using a local product out of New Iberia, Bruce's Foods, their sweet potato flour, just as a little dust on the fish itself. Mm-hmm. We're searing the snapper and then serving it over, you know, jalapeno herb rice.
Oh my gosh.
With a coconut cream reduction and then topping it off with pickled jicama and jalapeno slaw, and then also pickled onions.
Boy, that's interesting.
It sounds like a lot.
No, but
it's kind
light,
of a little bit of fusion.
Huh?
It's not really necessarily anything Cajun.
Uh-huh.
But
fresh.
It's I guess it's more based upon a French with, you know, fusion kind of thing.
Right.
I don't know. It's a lovely dish, and it's lighter. It's not necessarily so.
Like steak Louis, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you try to locally source your, you know, the seafood and can you locally source most of what you serve?
Always, yes. Uh-huh. I mean, we try to, surely. I mean, we serve two fish on our dinner menu, which is, you know, grouper and snapper, and that's all Gulf fish, all Gulf shrimp, Gulf oysters. I mean, I love shrimp from other parts of the country, but nothing quite tastes like Louisiana.
Oh, no.
Gulf
it's
shrimp.
So fresh. Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice.
Well, I want to head over to Cafe V when we're done. Doesn't that sound delicious? Gosh. Well, you know, we're talking about your restaurant, and I do want to segue, if we can, Ken, to what you're doing to help the whole restaurant community. I don't know if I'm accurate. I've heard mixed reports about if we have more locally owned restaurants per capita than other jurisdictions. I don't know if that's an accurate statement, but I do know that we have an incredible number of locally owned homegrown restaurants. And there's a perennial summertime event, Eat Lafayette, that, as I mentioned in the intro, that Charlie Goodson got behind to start with a lot of people with Lafayette Travel, and so many people have been involved in Eat Lafayette. And I know there's probably over 100 restaurants at this point. I don't know the number. But you took over as chair in 2017, if I'm correct. And this is an effort to not only let tourists know about what we have here, but to help each other, to help the local restaurant industry highlight what they serve, highlight where they are, and keep the businesses open. And especially during the summer, I'm sure a lot of people travel, so maybe sales dip. Can you talk about Eat Lafayette and your role in that as chair and what you'd like to see happen this year?
Sure. It's an amazing initiative. I mean, mm-hmm. started by Charlie, Ema Hawk, all those, all that generation of restaurateurs in Lafayette, you know, and it's really just an awareness campaign. You know, it's like, hey, y'all, these are the local restaurants that have defined Lafayette, that have made us the cultural destination that we are. Mm-hmm. And it's time to go out and re-celebrate and revisit those. In terms of the statistics, I'm not sure exactly where we sit in terms of how many locally owned restaurants, but I do know the overall saturation of Lafayette with restaurants is on par with New York City.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, per capita.
Per capita, yeah.
And, you know, it's based upon a lot of different things. You know, first off, Lafayette loves to eat. Mm-hmm. And corporate demographics discovered that years ago. And different restaurants were moving in. I mean, the Chili's store on Pinhook was the highest performing Chili's in the nation in the 80s, late 80s when they came in. Or maybe that was 90s. But anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, Lafayette just loves to get out and eat. Mm-hmm. And
it kills me because people build these big kitchens, and I don't even know if they use them. They're out eating in restaurants, you know. I mean, it's just amazing. So, yeah, so this was started back, I guess, about 13, 15 years ago. I don't know when Eat Lafayette was started, but it's been a successful event for several years now.
Yeah.
So what happened? How did you step up to become chair?
Well, they asked me to do so. Andrew mm-hmm. and I were always involved in the advisory board, mm-hmm. and I think that at some point they were looking more, you know, for someone to be a spokesman for the movement. I mean, of course, Ben and Lafayette Travels involved behind it, but mm-hmm. they wanted to reach out to the restaurant community and have someone who was in
right
to really kind of to be a spokesman for the movement. Right. And you know, it's great. It's been a wonderful opportunity. You know, working with them. I mean, they're so great with everything. You know, but I need to get out and see more of Lafayette and, mm-hmm. and getting out and reaching out to the members, which we are over 100 restaurants.
That's
now
great.
Strong.
Yeah.
You know, and just to talk to them and get their stories mm-hmm. about, you know, how the business has been over the past couple of
like
years.
Like what we're doing here.
How did you guys get creative?
Yeah.
You know, and
how did you maintain
it?
It's like the up and down times in Lafayette. That's the story. But these are, there's a video I want to send people to. I guess that was on, does Eat Lafayette have a Facebook page? I know I saw a video online.
Yes.
And it was a promo piece that was done in 2017. And it was a young boy with his family. And they showed him, you know, after games, going to Judy's Inn for burgers. And he was a little bit older and waiting tables. And then it, you know, kind of panned to you as in Cafe Vermilionville. But showing people these are, you know, part and parcel of your memories, of your life, of your family, and all these restaurants have been an integral part of people's lives, and it's so well done, but it makes you want to go eat at all the restaurants, and that's the purpose of this.
It is. It's it's an awareness campaign. It's uh-huh. what's defined Lafayette.
Yeah.
You know, and it is your memories. It's that time that, you know, you and your grandpa went to mm-hmm. Judy's Inn, just the two of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't get much better than that. The memories at Judy's Inn and the Judy's family, what they've done for Lafayette.
What an amazing story uh-huh. there, too.
Yeah. Really.
So many generations later.
So many generations. So you're partnering with all these restaurants, and I guess, is there a mentoring that goes on? Is that part of it, or just a way for you guys to get to know each other, to know who's in the business, and how does it work? Like for members, do they have promotional opportunities that they run through Eat Lafayette, or...
Well, all the members are really kind of collectively harnessing the marketing of the campaign itself, mm-hmm. you know, and it's more than that. Just everyone getting together and showing Lafayette what we do. You know, a lot of people are offering certain bundled deals and things of the sort, but you know, I like to see it as that, you know, this is what you do for Lafayette. Mm-hmm. You know, we typically do 4-course meals and things of the sort for rehearsal dinners and whatnot. So we do a 4-course special for Eat Lafayette. Hey, come to Cafe V. This is what we do.
Mm-hmm. And then like Don's Downtown, let's say, you know, been there forever, and remind people this is still a wonderful place to go.
Yes.
For business lunch or you know, family occasions. So there's just so many restaurants that you grew up with that I probably don't even know anything about.
Well, and likewise, too. I'm sure mm-hmm. it's the same. You know, it's just knowing where those spots are. There's a hidden Lafayette.
Yeah.
That there's some gems, and, you know, you might not know about them, but maybe when during the Eat Lafayette campaign, you're scrolling through, and you can mm-hmm. say, oh, wow, I need to go see Miss Marlene at the Creole Lunch House.
We were talking about Miss Marlene on 12th Street. A lot of people may not be aware of all the Upper Lafayette restaurants that have been there for quite a long time, and I don't think you get any better stuffed meat sandwiches or drive-through plate lunch. I mean, she's been working it and has a big distribution center, very successful and very quiet.
Very quiet
at the same time.
Yeah, you might not know about her if mm-hmm. you know, if it weren't for movements like this.
Yeah.
So I love Miss Marlene.
Right.
And I love Lafayette. Wow, y'all, we have so many good things to go out and eat, you know,
and to do.
And to do, and just to get out and just enjoy it. I mean, you don't get this in another city.
Mm-hmm.
You don't. You know, a lot of these restaurants, you can go to any town USA. Well, you know what? We're not any town USA.
No.
And that's what I enjoy most about being involved in mm-hmm. the Eat Lafayette campaign, to let people know, hey, this is what we are. And we almost need to fiercely protect it.
Right.
Otherwise, we're in danger of losing that. You know, food is a big part of what we do. It's just mm-hmm. as important as our music, as our festivals, as everything. And Lafayette needs to be reminded, hey, when you're out there,
mm-hmm.
think local. It needs to be almost more of a vigilant movement. It's like,
right,
guys, come support your local people.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you, nobody's in the restaurant business for the money. I say that maybe some people are. Maybe small business like us, though, it's not it. It's for the passion and the drive and just the love of the game.
You really do love what you're doing.
You have to.
Yeah.
You have to.
I wish people could see your face. You're beaming. And, you know, that's the point of this podcast. I moved here 35 years ago from Baton Rouge, very short distance. But I'm telling you, that drive across the Atchafalaya, when I moved here, I was really astounded at how different the culture was. Not just the French speaking. There was still a lot of French speaking in the courthouse. I clerked for a judge. But the whole culture, but the food, just phenomenal. And you're right. But people, I think, do need to celebrate. And I don't know. I thought this podcast would be a great way to kind of shine the light on one story at a time. Like I've really been wanting to have you on and let you talk about what you and Andrea have been doing with Cafe V. Mm-hmm. So when does Eat Lafayette start? When will this all begin?
I believe the kickoff is on June 19th.
Okay.
So there's going to be we're going to see for promotion boards behind the launch and all of that.
Talk about that event. Yeah, there's like an event with the launch. Is that correct?
Yes. And look, if you want to get out and experience all of what Lafayette has to offer, mm-hmm. it's basically like a car show for restaurants. I mean, everyone is out there doing their thing.
But it's the Louisiana Seafood Cook-Off to boot.
Right. And the competition, basically everybody competing for a title, you know?
Yeah, Billy Nungesser told me about that. I know this was moved here from New Orleans last year.
Yes.
And do you buy tickets for that to go?
Do you buy tickets for it? I believe through Lafayette Travel website. I'm not mm-hmm. sure exactly. But, it's a great event. I mean, it's a big party. I mean, you get confetti, everything. Mm-hmm. The convention center looks great. You know,
is that where it's going to be, the convention center?
Yeah.
I remember the first year or two of Eat Lafayette, I went to it at the Petroleum Club. It was kind of a smaller event, just getting started, and it's amazing over the years how this has grown.
Well, over the years, I mean, it was at the Hyman Center for years, and then that was a little, that space wasn't quite,
outgrew that.
But I mean, the participation, but basically every restaurant has a booth, and you can go out and sample what they do. Like, mm-hmm. we'll be doing our turtle soup.
Yeah.
And, you know.
So June 19th?
June 19th.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, that definitely is a place to be. So.
It was a great party last year.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So. Anything else about Eat Lafayette that we discuss? I want to get in as much as we can about that because this really is, I think, one of the biggest focuses of the year.
I just want to just really say, look, everyone just get out and enjoy the program. It's mm-hmm. it's so good. And I mean, and really, if you're not on vacation and you're going out and you're having a staycation, you're celebrating, go check out the local guys.
Because you won't get this anywhere else.
No.
Right.
No. A lot, you know, you can get that other stuff when you get to that town when you're on mm-hmm. vacation.
Right.
But there's only one Lafayette. And there's only food like this only here.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, speaking of here in Lafayette, I want to get in a personal story if we can. When I met you and Andrea, you were buying your house near the downtown area. And I know how much you love Lafayette because you wanted to live in the core of Lafayette. And I remember, I'd like you to share the story. You had a dream about a home that you wanted. And would you share that? I mean, is that too personal to get into?
Not at all.
It's just astounded me. And I've heard other people have the same type of dream later. So I want to share this with people.
Well, it kind of ties into the restaurant also, because it's an older home and mm-hmm. older place too. But I do firmly believe that these older homes find you. You don't go seeking them. They come mm-hmm. to you in different ways. And the way that our current residents came to me was pretty incredible. But,
yeah.
You know, I was in the real estate business at the time. I'd shown most of, you know, areas of Lafayette. I probably drove by this house before, but I didn't really know much about it. Mm-hmm. But one night, just randomly in a dream, I see this, you know, yellow two-story home, you know, four-square style with a basement and a balcony and all of this, and it just kind of scratched my head. We had no intention of buying property. We weren't going to be moving anytime soon. And then sure enough, you know, I kind of discarded the, and I get up and we're having coffee, and Andrea is actually working through the public real estate site, which we were both agents at the time. She could have mm-hmm. easily gotten on the MLS. So, wow, look at this place. Have you ever seen this house? Like, oh,
yeah.
Not until last night in my dream. That house had a basement. She's like, oh wow, this house has a basement. Okay, this is getting a little bit more creepy, because, I mean, I don't even know of any other home. Being a realtor, I'd never shown a home with a
not
basement
here.
In life yet.
Right.
Turns out, I discovered later on, there's about five.
Five.
One is our next door neighbor who was built by the same people. Uh-huh. But yeah, it was just this amazing space that I'd seen, and we found it the next day, and sure enough, we drove out. And
there, that was your dream?
There it was, yeah.
When I
got there. And actually, the balcony in my dream was a little misplaced on what the current house actually is, but then there's a painting on the wall that the current owner's nephew had done in college, and it had the exact porch that was in my dream, and that kind of took me back
a
little bit more. So, you know, the frissons, if you will. But,
yeah.
And, you know, we didn't make the decision right that day.
What did Andrea think? Like, uh-oh.
Well, we just thought divine intervention was upon us, and I guess we just mm-hmm. needed to listen. The universe at least tapped us on the shoulder and said, hey, maybe you need to be here.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It will be one day. We're still in the, it's a works in progress.
You're kind of busy at the restaurant most days, so.
Well, yes, and then actually that, you know, the restaurant came after we purchased the home, mm-hmm. so, you know, now we have two historic properties in our lives, and, you know. I'm learning the table saw very well. Put it like that. We'll be painting for a while.
Yeah, but thank you for sharing that, because I was astounded when I saw the home. And this was when I was working with Upper Lafayette. You guys were active in the Laplace Coterie at the time. And I met you, and y'all had me over. And, I mean, the home, it really is lovely. But when I heard about the dream, I just, it was kind of like a get chills kind mm-hmm. of moment, because I do believe in divine intervention, too, so. Yeah.
I do. Well, and one thing about, you know, in moving into the core of Lafayette, I mean, you get to experience so much more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get to, it's just great to be in downtown Lafayette, in what was once the true center and everything around, and the people. And we're seeing a huge resurgence back to the core. And that's great for, you know, our small little urban community.
It's so convenient to get anywhere from
is.
Downtown. So, yeah. Yeah. Do you have any advice for people coming up in the restaurant business, either that are thinking they'd like to be you one day, you know, with their own restaurant, or anything you've learned through the School of Hard Knocks that you wouldn't do? Like, any advice you might share?
Well, if anyone is thinking about the restaurant business as a career, they please come follow me around for, you know, mm-hmm. a couple of weeks.
I really would
welcome that. But just to where people really get a good understanding of what it is, and it's... We always joke, and I refer to it as a vow. It's not necessarily a business, just more of a vow.
Because you're married to your business.
Yes, that is a child at least, mm-hmm. A spouse also.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And Andrew and I both, we have a unique situation where we're both in the business
and you take
working
it home?
Partners and partners in life.
Yeah.
So that I think that's made us stronger, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
It's the challenges daily that we encompass in business. It's always interesting to see how both of us contribute to solutions and things. But advice with people in the restaurant business, you know, I don't think that anything can really prepare you to be a small business owner. Mm-hmm. there's just things that go into that I wish there was more training prior to. The restaurant business is one that's very unique in the fact that you have manufacturing and retail underneath one roof. So it's almost two different business models that have to congruent into one. You're taking a raw product and you're selling a finished mm-hmm. product on the very end.
And inventory, making sure you have what you need.
Everything's
got to be
perishable.
Challenging.
It's, keeping track of everything. It's quite a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Technology is affords you some great tools to really help out with that. But nothing can really prepare you. And for every day, I mean, I always just expect whatever's going on, and I try to be as just water-like as possible because it's going to happen.
Right. Right.
You know,
and I guess you saw that with your father growing up, that I'm sure he had his challenges. And you were probably not even there yet, but I mean, with the 80s, very challenging time to get through, and he did it.
Yes. All those restaurants that made it through the 80s, I mean, wow,
yeah,
that is incredible.
They're survivors.
I don't know how they did that. Mm-hmm. I mean, when 47% of your GDP is based upon one industry,
right,
and then all of a sudden it's gone.
Yep.
The rug is gone. We've got some helpful aspects of our diverse Lafayette economy now,
mm-hmm.
but these last couple of years in business in Lafayette, I think, have been challenging for all.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Well, thank you. We have Jason Sikora here with Raider Solutions that tapes the show for us. And I know, Jason, would you like to ask any questions? He always listens, and then he'll always miss something that I should have asked.
I feel like you're reading my stuff because I'll get done writing a question, and then you'll ask it, like the advice one. But I took this approach on this question. Items at your restaurant, if somebody is not familiar with Cajun food and they're just driving through town and they happen to stop by, what would you recommend they get off of your menu?
Well, you know, I wouldn't really necessarily say we're a Cajun restaurant. We have mm-hmm. some dishes that are kind of based upon that, but it's more of a French-inspired Cajun influence.
Okay.
So, but yes, we do have, you know, crawfish beignet, which, you know, everyone needs to try. That's been on our menu for 30 years, that it is basically the Trinity mixed in with a three blend of cheese and crawfish tails.
Mm.
It's rolled in flour and fried and served with a Creole sauce, which is basically Creole mustard and, you know, aioli or mayonnaise. And, you know, that's something that everyone should experience. I mean, mm-hmm. that's kind of more the more Cajun aspect of it. Turtle soup, I mean, there's a few restaurants that do it,
mm-hmm.
you know, locally,
mm-hmm.
but you need to experience that.
Yeah. And both of those, you'd never make it home. You know, I mean, maybe somebody would, but that no one I know.
Yeah. So, I mean, what else would I really recommend? I mean,
well, that's good enough for me.
Yeah.
Now I'm hungry.
Yeah.
There's a diverse number of restaurants in this town, but do you think that there's a restaurant that we're missing, like a traditional German bar or you know, an Irish pub? Or
I would love to see more pubs. I mean, I think a pub is so important for community because it is a neighborhood bar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. a gathering space as well, and I'd love to see that, you know, more in the downtown
area. And there
really
aren't. Are there any? I know there used to be one on East Simcoe. There was like
a
neighborhood
McMillan's pub.
Are they
what
still
they call it
open?
Now. Yes.
That's a cool place.
Yeah.
I ran for office years ago and I'd walk, and that really is a pub. Like, people hang out there, just the neighborhood.
Yeah. It's a neighborhood bar. It truly is.
I wonder if there's others that I just haven't stumbled upon.
That would be a great discovery.
That'd be a good story.
Lafayette.
Yeah, it would be. Huh?
Hit the road. Let's
do
go bar hopping, man. That sounds great. Every dive bar in town.
Yeah, only because I have to for work, you know.
Hey, that's
it's
right.
A job assignment.
It's a job.
Well, I have to taste wine for a living, too, so that can be a bit cumbersome.
Huh?
Actually, I say that. It really does. When you're tasting 70 at a time, it is work.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
You did the Dick Doty wine taste. He probably wasn't teaching when you were, he probably had retired or passed away when you were coming up.
Well, it was great. I got to meet Mr. Doty.
Oh, he was the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the Chaine de Rotisseurs and all of that,
yeah.
They were doing that in the 80s, and my dad was really involved in that also.
I took a class at UL with my husband, John. We would just taste like six little sips of wine. People would be quiet, and by the end of the class, rip-roaring, and we weren't even drinking that much, but it was just little sips and savoring it.
Mm.
But he made it fun. We really learned about wine, so
that's
that is a fun part of your
world.
Job. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
But besides Cafe V, what are some of your other favorite restaurants in Lafayette?
Oh, wow. Some of the favorite restaurants in Lafayette. I love Saigon Noodle.
Mm.
That's a great one. We visit them quite a bit.
That's on by Albertsons, right? Congress at Ambassador. That is good.
It's a great restaurant. Yeah. One of the best burgers. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so good. We've been sneaking out lately in the afternoon because they stay open and go and just disappear for a bit over there. It's a great burger. Of course, La Fonda. Wow, we love La Fonda. That's just such a great experience, too. Yeah. Pamplona downtown, one of my favorite bars. Their bar program there is exceptional. And just the atmosphere, what they did with that building, it's so beautiful. And you feel, that feels like Lafayette to me.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other restaurants.
I'm just doing this for myself, honestly.
Yeah.
Finally, my go-to question, and that is there something that you learned being a restaurant owner that you didn't know before that maybe the average person doesn't know?
Wow. The restaurant business has taught me so much in the art of now. We're in the make it happen business, and the improvisation that goes into that. I've no more about plumbing than I probably would care to ever in my life. Electrical, small electrical work, carpentry, just things like that. Maintaining a restaurant itself. I mean, you don't think about things like swings on doors, commercial doors that open and close all day long. Those go out, and they're really tough to change. And you can't always get a repairman to come out and take care of that.
Interesting.
I'm all over the place. I'm on the roof sometimes. It's on the job training is exceptional. And
makes sense.
Yeah. You're not just a manager. You really are a jack of all trades when you own your own restaurant or business.
Everything is so immediate and needs to happen in the moment. Yeah. That you often don't have time to wait. You have to figure out how to make it happen.
So you have your tool belt full of the tricks of the trade to keep the restaurant high quality, I'm sure.
Well, the greatest thing is it just teaches you can jump in. Mm-hmm. You can make this happen. You have to make this happen.
You have to.
And trust yourself and just do it.
Mm-hmm.
You can make it happen. Anybody can. So awesome. it's been liberating in that regard. So if anything, I'd probably say that. Anybody can be a YouTube expert these days.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
Yep. Awesome. Well, thank you. And one of these days, I'm going to get my guitar, head on over, and we'll jam.
Yeah, right on.
Great.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. You're both a pleasure. This has been a great interview.
Oh,
I want to thank
glad I enjoyed it too.
Ken Veron, owner and proprietor, along with his wife, Andrea, of Cafe Vermilionville, and also the 2018 chair of Eat Lafayette, which, as we discussed, starts on June 19th. So please check out their restaurant online, CafeVermilionville.com. Is that correct?
CafeV.com.
CafeV.com.
And our Facebook page is often populated with what we got going on.
CafeV.com. So. And then Eat Lafayette, of course, will be just a wonderful event this summer. And I'd like to thank Raider Solutions again and Jason Sikora for taping this episode of Discover Lafayette. You can find this episode and all of our episodes on the website discoverlafayette.net. It's also distributed through iTunes or anywhere that you get your podcast. Please listen, and if you would, stop and subscribe and then rate the show. It really helps us keep it going. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, I'm Jan Swift.